Hi, I'm Rod Wagner. I'm joined today by Doug Ponsler. Doug is the chairman of the Center of Visual Expertise, an initiative of the Toledo Museum of Art. The Center of Visual Expertise, or COVE, uses works of art to teach workers, and I'm quoting here from their website, to identify, interpret, and interact with the environment based on accurate visual information. They use art to improve safety. Now, Doug knows the world of applied safety. He was an executive of Owens Corning for 16 years, 8 of them as vice president of EHS and Operations Sustainability. Doug will be speaking at the Safe Start Human Factors Conference on November 5th and 6th in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Doug, thanks for being with me. Go with me, if you would, on this first question. Imagine the following scenario. There's a vice president of safety and health who's reviewing the incident numbers, and she notices there's a serious uptick at her company. She pulls her staff together and she says, "We've got a serious issue with accidents and close calls. Call the Toledo Museum of Art and ask if they can help." Now, I think you'd agree that for most people, that's not an intuitive chain of logic. Help me understand why that's actually not a strange idea.
Well, first of all, Rod, I would agree with you. That wouldn't be the sort of number one call that most safety professionals or executives would make, is to a museum to sort of help with the safety program and the safety efforts at any particular company or organization. And we sort of found ourselves in that same place back in 2015 when I was at Owens Corning. And it was really quite accidental that we established this relationship with the museum and this connection to visual literacy. And it really developed because we had heard that the museum had this curriculum, they had this expertise around visual literacy, which was sort of shorthanded as learning to see. And when I heard the words learning to see, it immediately connected to me in terms of work that we were doing around visual literacy, around hazard recognition. We had had a fairly successful hazard recognition and control training program that we'd had in place for a couple of years, and we were looking for a way to raise that program to the next level. And so we were beginning the thought process of making some changes in it. But when I heard about this Learning to See program that existed at the museum, you know, it caused me to wonder whether there was something in that that could help us in our safety program. So we, you know, met with the museum, and it was sort of a classic, you know, sat down in a conference room, and my question was, what's visual literacy? Their question was, what's safety? And it was through that sort of dialogue that we started to understand that, you know, for decades in art education, they've taught processes and built skills and capabilities in individuals to be able to truly appreciate, you know, what's in front of them, whether it's an object, a painting, a scene. You know, it doesn't really matter, but really building a skill set in terms of how they can examine that and appreciate the finest, you know, the finest details. And in visual literacy sort of language, and as the Toledo Museum of Art had really refined a lot of these practices, it really boiled down to what is it that you see, what does it mean, and what do you do about it? And if you think about those three statements, you know, so much of the work that we do in safety is related to what is it that we see, how do we interpret what it means in terms of risk and risk profile and so forth, and what action is appropriate at the time, and what action do we take. So while it's not natural to think about a museum being able to contribute to, you know, a safety program, that discipline of being able to look and interpret and act is exactly what a lot of our work in safety is really all about. And that's where this connection between the world of art and art education and industry and safety really developed.
So is that the definition of visual literacy? What does visual literacy mean?
Yeah, in the shortest sort of way to think about what visual literacy is, that's exactly it. You know, it is being able to see and appreciate what's there, being able to break through the natural tendencies we have to pay attention to certain things and not see others. Because we see more completely, we're able to draw a much better interpretation and a more complete interpretation of what it is that we're looking at. And that can be a piece of equipment, it can be a production line, it can be a warehouse, you know, you can go on and on and on with the different scenarios that exist. And if we're able to interpret what we're seeing better, then we're able to take much better actions in terms of either resolving something that needs to be resolved immediately, or if it's relatively low risk and low exposure, you know, we have an opportunity to maybe defer action on that until it can be done, you know, in a different, you know, sort of way. But it's really all about what we see, what it means, and what action we take as a result.
I've been exposed to some research about what's called in human physiology foveated vision, the idea that we see very clearly, crisply, full color, right in the center of our retina, but around the edges our vision is actually quite poor. Is that part of visual literacy, to understand what we're seeing at any one point in time and what we're... where we're filling in the blanks?
Yeah, it's certainly true, and it's not necessarily where we focus in terms of that physiology, but where we focus is on the practices that can be used to overcome not only where our direct attention is paid, but how we move away from what we normally look at and look at other things that surround it. When we look at something, we tend to see, you know, maybe 10% or so of what it is that we're looking at, and the brain is filling in really the other 90%. And the good news is that the brain is like really good at that. I mean, if it wasn't, then we would be having, you know, sort of horrific issues as human beings, you know, being able to function if we were truly only, you know, sort of seeing and interpreting only about 10% of what we're taking in. But, you know, the brain helps us sort all that out and fills in what we're not seeing based upon expectations, based upon our experiences, both of which kind of lead us to biases in terms of what we might expect to see. And by and large, we get along, you know, pretty well that way, but it's not perfect. And when we think about what we're trying to accomplish in our workplaces and at home with respect to safety, we're trying to be perfect. You know, we're trying to identify everything that can represent an exposure and make sure that we're controlling that exposure so that it's not the incident that informs us we have a situation, but rather we see that in advance. And that's how we leverage the lessons in visual literacy, is to be able to skill ourselves and those within our organization to be more effective in how we look and really see what's in front of us.
It still seems a bit of a non sequitur. I mean, I've been exposed to your work for some time now, but it still seems a bit of a jump, if you will. How does visual literacy work in combination with traditional safety initiatives?
Yeah, great question. And that's one that we really want to make sure that we keep visual literacy in the proper context. First of all, if we're practicing, you know, using great tools and processes around being more visually acute in terms of what we're seeing, that doesn't mean that we have to stop guarding equipment and stop doing permits and all those sort of things. You know, it's still important for us to have core safety processes in place. I mean, those are protections that need to be there in order to be able to make sure that when we have that situation where an action might be taken that's unanticipated, there's layers of protection to keep that from turning into an incident that we don't want to have. What visual literacy does is it helps us strengthen those processes so that we're more effective in being able to execute hazard recognition, hazard hunts, completing a work permit, because we're more effective in being able to actually examine what it is that we're going to do, what environment we're in, and it allows us to do a better job of being able to identify those things that represent exposures, represent risk, and could actually turn into an incident.
Now, do companies send their employees to the museum, or do you hit the road with the tools and techniques?
Well, we do both. I mean, our preference is that we do as much as we can actually in a museum setting, and we do that because we find it to be a very effective learning environment. You know, our core program, our Foundations of Visual Literacy, is a two-day program that we do at the museum, and we spend, you know, 30-40% of our time in the classroom not only learning about what visual literacy is and why it matters, but also doing some classroom sort of exercises. But the balance of our time is actually spent out in the galleries. And we use objects of art in order to be able to drive home the lessons and the processes that we're teaching. The reason that we see that as being important, but also we get incredible positive feedback from doing that, is that it sets aside the normal workplace. And you kind of leave the baggage of the normal workplace behind, and you're really able to focus on, you know, what is visual literacy all about. And people find it fun as well. And, you know, often, you know, the time we spend together focused on visual literacy, you know, is often described as innovative and fun and different. And I know, you know, in my years in environmental health and safety, it wasn't often that anyone described our training programs as fun, innovative, and those kind of accolades. So being able to do it in a different environment, leveraging a different set of assets in order to be able to teach the principles, which are the objects of art, is a very effective way to be able to do it.
Is there something to be said there about how people get stuck in ruts when they work the same shift at the same place, doing the same thing week after week after week, and that part of the effectiveness, not just obviously going to a museum, a place that's visually so stimulating, but also just getting out of the work zone?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you just think about being in your normal, you know, place of employment or your normal, you know, sort of work area, and, you know, trying to learn something new, I mean, you are sort of being pulled back to, you know, what's going on in your environment, and things come back to memory that need to be addressed or pay attention to. So it can be a little hard to separate yourself. And that's why the museum environment, or in some cases an alternative environment, will serve a great purpose there. Now, at the same time, you know, it's not practical that, you know, a large organization, you know, we work with some organizations that are, you know, 25 to 50,000 people and above. And, you know, never will all 25,000 people from around the world find their way to Toledo, to the Museum of Art, or, you know, any other art museum around the world. What we focus on is we focus on those individuals, just like in any effort that we have in an organization, that we want them to become the local experts, the company experts on visual literacy, so they then can then train, you know, principles and processes within their organization. So we're really focused on, and we call it a train-the-trainer program like most people do, but we're really focused on building that level of expertise in those individuals that can then carry it back to their companies.
Among those to whom you've been exposed, who's been the most interesting program participant? Maybe someone that you were surprised to see in the program in the first place, or whose experience was really mind-blowing?
Yeah, we've seen it all. I mean, we've had, you know, senior-level executives, you know, even CEOs that have sat in the workshop, and, you know, all of a sudden, the light bulbs are clicking in terms of, wow, I didn't see what that other person is now describing that they saw, you know, in a particular painting or in a particular picture that we might be working on. And we've had individuals that, you know, are frontline workers, that, you know, you walk in the room and they're sitting there with their arms crossed and, you know, sort of at least in physical appearance, challenging you to, you know, sort of teach them anything that could be relevant to them. And it doesn't take long till they're headlong into it. I remember a session that we did in Indianapolis where, you know, there was a particular individual that, you know, at the beginning of the workshop, you know, you sort of felt those sort of vibes coming. And it wasn't long till he was one of the most active participants in the workshop for both days. So you just never know, you know, who's going to take to it you know, really dig in and who might be a little bit of a tougher nut to crack.
Do you have a lot of tough converts? I mean, before we talked today, I was thinking the stereotypical longshoreman or journeyman electrician who, when you say to them, we're going to work on our visual literacy, says, our what? We're going to work on what?
Oh, I'm sure that that's definitely the case. I mean, there's some portion that, you know, as you sort of opened the conversation, this leap between safety and, you know, the world of art and art education doesn't seem to be sort of a logical walk. So I'm sure there's some reactions like that. But I think by the time that we get started, you know, we see their interest peak in terms of what is this all about? And all of a sudden, because it is personal, I mean, we're talking about things that exist, you know, not only in the workplace, but also in our lives overall. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about is, you know, who's had the experience where there's been an incident in the workplace, there might be an incident at home or whatever, and all of a sudden you realize, you know, I've walked by that 1,000 times and I never saw it. It was just so in the background of my normal workplace or my normal home life. And then something happened and it drew my attention to it. And now I can't believe that I didn't see it before. And because it's personal and because it's 24/7, I think people begin to connect with it in a different kind of way than what they might connect with if we're only focused on their particular job task in their particular work environment.
So how do you bridge between the worlds of art and the industrial environment? I mean, specifically, what kinds of concepts is a person supposed to learn from looking at a piece of art and then transfer to, say, an oil rig?
Yeah, so a great question. And what we do is we use, you know, art and art history and objects of art to be able to teach the principles. Then we move to actual workplace examples in order to be able to apply what we've learned. So I know we don't have something we can use to illustrate in this conversation, but just in sort of a general description, one of the components that we use to improve our visual acuity is applying the elements of art that is taught in art education. And the elements of art are things like lines and shapes and colors and contrast and space so we work on those identifying those elements of art using works of art. But then we flip to a photograph of a typical work scene. And all of a sudden, when we start to look for lines and shapes and colors in that work scene, we start to see things that we might not have noticed before. So that's the transference from what is taught in art education to the application that is taught, you know, for the workplace. And that's what our strength really is from a Cove standpoint is, you know, we're combining the expertise that the Toledo Museum of Art in this case has in visual literacy with its application in the industrial world through individuals that have had, you know, deep experience in safety and operations, working for large Fortune 500 companies in most respects.
So usually when you go to a museum, you're looking to be intrigued, visually stimulated, something thought-provoking. The end in mind is to say, wow, that piece really moves me, or that one's got me thinking, or I've never seen something quite like that. Here you're using art for a very practical purpose, for people to be able to see in an environment where they could lose a limb or get themselves killed. Is there a certain piece of art or a certain type of art that seems to work best to help employees rethink how they're seeing in an industrial environment?
You know, we find that a wide variety works very well. I mean, it's not like there's some bad art that isn't good for teaching the lessons and so forth. And there's really, really good art that, you know, that helps. I mean, any sort of painting or any sort of drawing or object, you know, we find works very well. We have, you know, one of the exercises we do is the individuals actually select an item that they're going to describe to another individual. And we see significant variety in terms of what people will go out into the gallery and actually select in order to be able to describe to someone else for the purposes of them being able to draw it off of only their description. And, you know, any object really works. If we're not in a museum, we can use dog toys and all kind of other things successfully as well. So it's really the whole idea of being able to look at something, be able to interpret what it is that you're looking at, being able to describe it, in a way that someone else can understand what you're talking about.
So it just so happens that today the Toledo Museum of Art has on its website a photo from Hubert Robert's 1783 painting called The Studio of an Antiquities Restorer in Rome. I was looking at this, and from a traditional safety perspective, I see all kinds of things. The building is old, and it looks unsafe. The roof is falling apart. There's a guy at the top of a ladder, and he looks like he's reaching too far. And, of course, this being way back when, there's no personal protective equipment. But I'm guessing you'd say that what I just described is looking, not visual literacy. Can you help me understand the difference?
Yeah, I would say a couple things about that. I think, you know, first of all, safety practices in 1783 probably weren't all that well developed at the time. But as far as the difference between looking and truly seeing, you know, we live in an environment where we're heavily influenced by getting things done quickly and being able to leverage the sort of knowledge and expertise that we have and allow that to sort of draw us, you know, to a focus. So, you know, when someone is looking at that particular painting that you're talking about, and I'm familiar with it in our gallery, you know, each of us are going to pay attention to certain things, and we're very quickly going to draw interpretation from that. You may look at something like the individual that's on the ladder, and immediately that captures your attention. And it can capture your attention because you're naturally perhaps drawn to people. It can capture your attention immediately because of its positioning, you know, in that particular composition. You know, there's lots of reasons that we pay attention to some things and we don't pay attention to others. The visual literacy component that comes into play here is that there are practices that we can employ that sort of breaks us out of our natural tendency to pay attention to some things and ignore others. And by following those processes, we can examine that particular painting, we can examine a piece of equipment, we can examine a production line, doesn't really matter. And we can take in more completely everything that's occurring there, and from that, we'll be able to see more things than what we have been able to see before. And by seeing more things, back to the beginning of our conversation, we're able to draw a stronger interpretation of what's actually happening, and we can arrive at actions that are more appropriate for what's happening than we might if we missed those items.
Part of the program's effectiveness, it seems to me, is in the signal that it sends to employees that their employers care. If a company gives someone gloves, he could say, well, I'm not giving you credit for that because I need gloves to do the job. But if a company says, we're going to bring you to the Toledo Museum of Art, it makes employees at least wonder, doesn't it, if the employer is going above and beyond?
Yeah, I think so, and I think we see that in our participants as well. I think when we talk about employee engagement, I mean, there's nothing more engaging in many respects than an employer who's willing to invest in each of us as individuals. And, you know, that investment comes a lot of different ways, and we value that investment in different ways as well. I mean, you know, often, you know, we may be asked to, you know, engage in a e-learning module around a particular topic. That's very, could be effective. It can be very necessary, but it can be maybe not as engaging as taking someone out of the workplace, putting them in a different, in a unique environment, in a really special environment, and saying, you know, we want you to understand, you know, these principles that are coming out of art education that we can put to work in the workplace. So I think that investment, you know, is a key to being able to make employees feel like, you know, they're cared for. There's an investment going into them that's different and sort of above the norm.
What's been the biggest surprise as you've taken this program to companies?
Well, I think maybe the biggest surprise is often, you know, how the value proposition is relatively simple compared to many other value propositions that we think about, you know, in the business world. You know, we often talk with companies about the fact that, you know, every day in their organization and organizations like theirs, individuals are going out to perform tasks. And we do too if we work in that organization. You know, we may be going out to inspect a piece of equipment or inspect product or repair a piece of equipment. You know, there's all kind of tasks that are executed on a daily basis, and all of them involve seeing. You know, we have to go look and we have to go see what it is that we're tasked with being able to go do. We also, you know, spend a lot of time training people in our organizations as well. And sometimes we think we don't train enough, and that certainly can be true as well. But there's a lot of training that goes on that we also often don't think about, like on-the-job training and watching someone else perform a task if they're more experienced than what we are and believing that they may know better how to get that done than what I might, and we begin to copy practices that way and so forth. But there's a lot of training, you know, that goes on in an organization. But fundamentally, the value proposition for visual literacy is that if seeing is really important to being able to be successful in performing tasks that we need to perform, when is the last time that anyone went through a training or a class or an investment in improving their ability to see? When we ask that question in the workshops, it is rare that anyone will put their hand up and say, yeah, I've actually been through, you know, some kind of a class on how to see. And that rare occasion that that hand goes up, it's often someone that has some art education in their background. So, you know, we take for granted that because we've been, if we're able-sighted, we have been seeing all of our lives. We never turn it on, just like we don't turn breathing on. We just do it, and it's automatic, and we have a lot of confidence that we're actually seeing what's there. But we prove to ourselves every day that's not true when we walk by that hazard or that that exposure, and we don't deal with it because we don't see it until an incident informs us that it's there. So, you know, it's that value proposition that, that really causes people to reflect and to think that, yeah, I have those examples in my life and my workplace and at home that I can connect with that. The second thing I would say about, you know, the kind of the surprise factor here is, you know, companies that have engaged and they've adopted, you know, the application of visual literacy, they've been also very creative in terms of how they build it into their processes. We believe that visual literacy in and of itself is not an initiative. What we do believe that we can improve the safety processes that are important to us by skilling up people with visual literacy capabilities. And so, you know, and companies, really, that really resonates with companies because they're not after a new initiative. You know, no one is anxious to put their hand up and say, you know, I got six things going on. I'd love to create a seventh. You know, the innovativeness of being able to integrate visual literacy inside of hazard recognition, inside of incident investigation, inside of design for safety reviews is the way to go. And it's that innovativeness of that application, I think, that makes it very real.
Where does the program go from here?
Yeah, I think, you know, we started from the perspective of educating around what visual literacy is, why it matters, and in a broad sense, its application to safety. And then, you know, we've migrated into getting a little more specific on particular practice areas where we can take, you know, the foundations of visual literacy and the tools and processes that we have, and we can link them together with common safety processes that we execute every day. So, you know, we've focused initially on hazard recognition and also incident investigation. And in the case of hazard recognition, there's all kind of programs that are out there. There's all kind of things that people are doing. And we're not, you know, we're not proponents of one versus another. But what we can do, whatever program you're engaged with around hazard recognition, if we improve our ability to see, then we improve our ability to actually identify more hazards. And we have some initial evidence. I want to emphasize that because the body of quantified impact will grow over time. But we have some, you know, initial impact numbers that, you know, are in the, you know, 30% range in terms of being able to identify more issues than what happened before visual literacy, you know, was utilized to skill up the people who are performing those tasks. And the same thing's true in incident investigation. I mean, there's everyone has their root cause and corrective action methodologies, and sometimes within companies there's multiple methods that are being used. We're not advocating for any one in particular, because all of them have a set of common steps, and we can link the lessons from visual literacy to those common steps and bring visual literacy into that space as well. And then we're working on how visual literacy relates to leadership, how leaders can be more effective by understanding the principles of visual literacy and the practices associated with that, and also in the area of observations. A lot of companies, have invested in behavior-based safety, sort of processes and other observation processes. And again, anything that you're using to actually look and see and observe, you can benefit by having capabilities in visual literacy.
You're speaking at the Safe Start Human Factors Conference in November. Could you give a preview of your remarks there? And are you bringing some art with you?
Yeah, well, we'll bring some images with us, for sure, in order to be able to talk through the time that we have together. But the heart of the discussion at Safe Start, the Safe Start conference, will really be around those three points that I just referenced, and that is, what is visual literacy? When we say visual literacy, what is it that we mean? Why does it matter to us in our daily lives? And then what is this relationship to safety? And and what you will hear me say over and over and over again, we can substitute for the words visual literacy. It's all about what we see. It's about what it means, and it's all about what we do as a result of that. And that's what we're trying to improve.
For people who are, let's say, driving their cars right now while listening to this, are there two or three points that have emerged from this program that they should know right now to ensure that they get home safely?
Yeah, I think first of all, put the phone down. Now, that's that. if you happen to have the phone to your to your ear, unfortunately, or otherwise, put the phone down. And that isn't related necessarily to our program, but anyone that's driving, that's always the first thing that I say. But the thing that goes along with this process of improving our visual capability and our ability to interpret is really slowing down. Too often, and you used the word earlier, look, too often we look and then we interpret. But when we look, we don't necessarily see. So I would tell everybody to, slow down. Take a few extra seconds or more when you're examining something and really make sure that you're seeing really what's there. The second thing I would say is look at it from a different perspective. Too often, we walk up to something and we look at it only one way. Let's look at it a couple ways. Let's look at it from the side. Let's look at it from the back. Let's look at it close. Let's look at it far. Make sure that we're using the opportunity to see things from a different perspective, which can lead us to see different things, sort of all together. And then, the last thing I would say is there's nothing better to convince yourself you're seeing what is in front of you than actually describing it. So whether you're describing it to yourself or you're describing it to someone that may be with you, take a few seconds and just describe what it is that you're looking at. And in particular, if you have someone else with you, you'll be surprised at the dialogue that then creates about what you are seeing that they may not be seeing. And that's the payoff. That's what we're trying to do.
I'd like to close, if I might, with a more personal question. You've had a long and successful career, much of it at Owens Corning, and I'm guessing that if you wanted to jump on a motorcycle and cruise to all the national parks or go fly fishing for a couple of years, you'd be in a position to do so. So there must be something particularly meaningful about this work. What is it?
Great question. I've had the great opportunity to be able to do a lot of different things over the years that I spent in industry. But there's no higher mission in my mind than creating an environment and engaging with our people in a way that they can go home, the way that they came to work or better. In terms of some other things that we can do in the workplace and so forth. So it's just this mission of being able to take art education and be able to use it in a way that saves lives, you know, is a pretty motivating way to, you know, think about what you're doing every day. And, you know, there's a lot of work that's been going on and will continue to go on in the world of safety that is borrowing from other disciplines. And a lot of our high-performing, you know, organizations, you know, maybe they've plateaued. You know, they're certainly convicted to get to, committed to get to zero, and they're struggling to get there, and they're looking for, you know, things that can be drawn from other disciplines that can help that. And I think visual literacy and what's been taught in art education for decades is one piece of that. So being involved in all of that is pretty motivating.
Doug Ponsler, Chairman of the Center of Visual Expertise, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today.
You are welcome, Rod, and very nice to talk to you, and look forward to seeing everyone in November.